to Mr. Biz Radio, Biz Talk for Biz Owners. If you're ready to stop faking the funk and take your business onward and upward, this show is for you. And now, here's Mr. Biz, Ken Wentworth.
All right, welcome to another episode of Mr. Biz Radio. With me, Mr. Biz Ken Wentworth. And we are going to talk about a topic that we have covered on the show, but in 7.5 years, we've covered it a few times, but we have not covered it in a good while, and we have not covered it with the king of what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about scaling your business, and we beat the bushes a little bit, as we are prone to do, looking for expert guests, as we always do, and we found the king of scaling, Mr. Kurt Euler. He's a sought-after marketing leader that's been called the king of scaling. He has built and run growth for early-stage companies, as well as those over $500 million in revenue, and assembled teams across 6 continents. In the past few years, he's been an executive with a public company and coached dozens of mid-market companies. Kurt, Mr. King of Scaling, hats off. Welcome to Mr. Biz Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I know it's been a while in the making, and I've been looking forward to it because, again, you know, everyone has their own sort of recipe for different things, fill in the blank of everything, right? And we've had some people on that are, you know, kind of scalers at businesses, and they all have a different approach, right? Everyone's got a little bit of a taste. And so I thought it'd be great to have you on because I know you've done this, as we mentioned in the intro, a bunch of different ways, startups, small, mid, giant, like all over the place. And so I wanted to get sort of your flavor of all of this stuff. But before we get into all that, if you would, Kurt, let's talk a little bit about, you know, your entrepreneurial journey. What's kind of led you to where you're at now?
Yeah, I've had times in my background where I've been both a serial and parallel entrepreneur. I don't sleep a lot, but so I often when I'm in that pure entrepreneur on the road, I have a lot of things going on. I started 2 LLCs when I was 14 because I had enough employees in both that, of course, the government comes after you for their share. And right. But I've always, I mean, in one of those first companies, I mean, it was doing what you usually do when you're 13 and 14. You start doing lawn care services and became a big enough business. I ended up scaling that and selling it for 6 figures when I went to college. But I've pretty much for most of my adult career been in technology and business to business, increasingly into consumer facing roles as well. And kind of across usually things that are either very complex technology, complex sales, or what's very evident to everybody, even small business today, where technology is coming in and is just disrupting things like crazy. And people are making good decisions. And more frequently, they're either frozen or they're making bad decisions.
So I have to ask. So 14, I had a similar, I think I was, I'm not trying to be a story topper, but, and I wasn't really an entrepreneur. I was working for another, this is going to really date me, but my gray hair does anyway. I delivered newspapers. I mowed lawns as well. But I lived in a really hilly area where we lived. And so my parents wouldn't let me mow many lawns because they were afraid I was going to chop my foot off or, you know, whatever with a lawnmower. So I had to wait till I was a little bit older before I got into that. But I was delivering newspapers when I was like 12 years old. But so what do you think, Kurt's, you know, were your parents entrepreneurs? Like, where do you think you picked that up?
My mom was a grinder. I mean, she was just a hard worker, from a family of farmers that moved on to do other things with much of their careers. But my dad really just, he quietly helped me from the background, but he let me do things and fail. Like I mentioned, I started 2 LLCs. The only help I got with my father or parents from there was my dad saying, you've been hiring people for next year. This was the end of my going into Christmas of the year before. And he goes, you're going to have to pay people. You need an accountant. You need to go figure that out. Now, was he behind the scenes making sure, like, hey, I talked to an accountant and did I think I had things in order? Possibly. But as the 13 and 14 year old, I had no idea that it wasn't entirely on me to figure out or to fail. And so I think I kind of like just stumbled my way through that because like, hey, there's no one coming in to help save you from this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's interesting. Yeah. My dad kind of pushed me along the same line. My dad was a blue collar worked in a steel mill, and didn't want that. So as a kid, I was like, you know, I think a lot of kids, like especially boys, like they want to be what their dad is, right? I want to follow my dad's footsteps. And my dad was like, I was like in, I don't know, late elementary, early middle school. My dad was like, yeah, no, you don't want to do that. And the small town I grew up in, My grandfather worked in the steel mill. My uncles worked in the steel mill. My dad did. Like, when you're a male, when you graduate high school at 18, you go work in a steel mill for whatever, 30 or 40 years and retire and have a decent pension and all that other good stuff. And my dad was like, no, you don't want to do that. And so in a tangential, but I think similar way, my dad was kind of pushing me to do that, even though, and I think looking back now, he probably regretted that he hadn't done something like that. And he was trying to instill that in me at an early age. And it sounds like you probably got a little bit of that. You know, your dad's kind of almost encouraging you, like you said, to fail, right? To learn, right? And you learn from your mom. Your mom's a grinder. And that's, you know, you're an entrepreneur. You got to have those characteristics for sure.
I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, everybody thinks that there's this concept of passive income. You're gonna figure things out. It's like the only people I know that are earning passive income have done a shit ton of work to get things set up. And so then things are, that work is just paying off later. There's consequences of all that work, whether it's systems or it's investing where you may get dividends and other things out. It's like, no, there was a lot of work. There's no such thing as just drop some money or 10 minutes of work and then get paid for the rest of your life.
And in today's day and age, I hate to sound like, you know, grouchy old man, get off my lawn, but man, there's so many people who think, young people who think like, hey man, I want, you know, they're 20 years old and they're like, I want passive income. I'm like, all right, well, in 15 years you might have some. You know, to your point, it's not just that easy. Passive income's definitely possible, right? But it takes a good while to get there.
And there's nothing wrong with like doing things you enjoy. I mean, I have a life now and most of my entire career, like I don't need to go on vacation because I love what I do on a daily basis. And so like, you know, not passive income, but it's like I was working for a bigger public company that we had this huge scaling system we may talk about. On the side, I'd started, you know, this was like 2000, 2001, I started a blog called Technology Suits. And so it was just effort. And I was writing about how do you tell complex technology things to business people, basically the suit, hence the name Technology Suits. Well, it was effort. And so I wrote this little bit of curation engine to go and find all the RSS feeds back in the day and pull in and write a little snippet. Well, it was successful enough. I sold it to AOL. It was a nice little exit for a side project. It wasn't passive income. It was me working in the evenings as opposed to going to the bar like my friends were or hanging out at the office just for extra hours where people like at Bain Capital. It was like, no. I had a hobby that ended up having a nice payoff.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that, Kurt. So I got three daughters, and my middle daughter was just giving me some grief about, she said, next year, because we don't have a family vacation plan for this year. And she said, next year, she's graduating from college next year. And she said, we have to do a family vacation next year. And she said, we haven't done it for a while. And I said, when's the last vacation I went on? You know, she just went on spring break with her friends and all. And she's like, she's thinking back. I'm like, I've been on vacation since COVID. But I'm not complaining about it, right? Because same thing. I love what I do, so it's not like work. I don't feel like I need a vacation from. Do I like to get away and go to the beach? Yeah. Well, you know what I do, and probably similar thing you do, Kurt. I do business down in South Florida, so I'll go down to South Florida. I'm doing business, and in the morning I get up and I go out run on the beach, and in the evening I'm sitting by the pool or whatever. So I'm kind of combining things a little bit. So it's kind of cheating, I guess, as far as, you know, it's not a vacation, but a kind of vacation. So yeah, but I absolutely can relate to, I do what I love to do, so I don't feel like I need, you know, necessarily a vacation from it. Guys, we're talking this week with Mr. Kurt Euler. You can find out more at his website. We'll put all this stuff in the show notes, but his KurtEuler.com on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, and YouTube. Come back after the break. We're going to find out a little bit more about how Kurt can help us scale our businesses.
If you would like to reach hundreds of thousands of business owners every week, Mr. Biz Radio can help. Our show airs globally 7 days a week for more than 25 hours across several internet radio stations, plus 20-plus podcast platforms. Also, video exposure on the new exclusive Mr. Biz Network streaming channel, which gets blasted to 100-plus streaming platforms and the Mr. Biz YouTube channel and our 350,000 social media followers multiple times every week. Join Mr. Biz Nation as an advertiser by emailing us at info@MrBizSolutions.com.
Attention, Mr. Biz Nation. We have an exclusive offer just for you. Get lifetime access to scarcity countdown timers and logic links for only $69. Yes, you heard it right. Only $69. These tools will add urgency to your email campaigns and website pages, helping you increase conversions, sales, and capture more leads. Don't miss this incredible opportunity. Visit GetPulseTools.com now and take your business to new heights.
Got a question for Mr. Biz you want answered on air? Email it to info@MrBizSolutions.com. Now, once again, here's Mr. Biz.
All right, welcome back to the show. Again, talking to Mr. Kurt Euler this week. So, Kurt, first of all, I have to ask a question, a little bit off the beaten path, I guess. So perhaps when I was doing some, let's call it, people have different definitions, right, Kurt? So you could call it show research, you could call it cyber stalking, whatever. I noticed on your X profile, you mentioned 10X. Mm-hmm. Are you a Grant Cardone guy, or is that just like you just use that, or are you a Cardone guy?
I just use it. I don't actually like it. There's a lot I disagree with Grant's. I probably fall somewhere between like this triangle of Grant Cardone, Gary Vaynerchuk, and Dave Ramsey. So,
okay. Yeah.
But 10X is kind of the minimum we try to shoot for. A lot of companies were actually shooting for much more than that.
Yeah, understood. I didn't know. I kind of assumed it was just your thing because I think Grant has like the 10 and the X is red and the 10 is white or something like that. And you didn't have it like that. So I'm like, hey, probably not necessarily Cardone related. But so you had mentioned during the first segment about, you know, using technology and things like that. And a lot of people are making mistakes. And I want to talk in the last segment about some tips on scaling. So I don't want to, you know, give away some of that stuff. But what are some, on the flip side, what are some mistakes that you see that a lot of, you know, small, medium-sized business, or even some of the big ones that are making, you know, right now, currently, what mistakes are they making? You're like, gosh, why are you guys doing this?
Well, I know this will make any of the small businesses that listen feel a lot better. I know two public companies, they're still mid-market size. They're smaller public companies, but where in both these companies, their CEOs in the last 12 months have gone to everybody that reports to them and the next level down, demanding that they come back, not with how they're thinking about incorporating AI, but demanding every department to come back to the CEO with a list of the three ways that they are implementing AI this year. Like, not that AI can't help you in accounting or it's useful a lot of places in marketing and content generation, but their requirements are, how are you implementing it? Well, these are public companies. They don't realize it because they're not technology people, but they're exposing those companies to unbound risk. Like, do I use marketing? Do I use AI for generating articles or social media posts? Absolutely. Would I ever just put it on like, hey, set and go and forget it? Not if I was a solo electrical engineer or electrician, and not if I was running a big public company. But people are doing things like that now because some internet guru said they could.
Yeah, and I agree 100%. So we're utilizing AI and some things, and we have been for, gosh, probably a little over a year now. But I'm very hesitant on certain things like that because especially, you know, with us having the show here, I've been doing a show, like I said, for 7+ years. You know, I've got a ton of YouTube content. You know, I've done a bunch of interviews myself. I've written 3 books. I've got, you know, all these different things. I'm like, and I had someone tell me almost the opposite of what you're talking about. You know, the internet guru saying, hey, use AI and whatever. And he said, hey, you got to be, for me specifically, he said, be very careful because people who follow you or are familiar with your content, they're going to be able to see right away that's not you. Like if you're writing if I went out and created a blog using AI, he's like, you've had enough content out there that people know sort of your voice and how you say things and, you know, your mannerisms and your little stupid Kenisms, as my family would say. And he said, you know, for you, it's probably not going to be a good idea right now. And I mean, we're talking about iterative things and creating a sort of a Mr. Biz AI, you know, feeding a bunch of my content into it. So I'll have an AI that does talk and think like me. But I agree with you. I think especially with people have a, imagine if Gary Vaynerchuk all of a sudden started to do that.
Right.
Like people who followed Gary Vee, they're going to go like, that's not him.
Well, and even there, you can take your content and put it into a lot of the AI models, but unless you're building something completely custom, you don't realize it, but it's going to take your content. It's going to take your 3 books And when somebody asks the chatbot information, it's going to give it based on not just the information you fed it for you, but other content which might disagree with your content as well. And so it's actually very costly to build something that's truly just going to be yours. Like I'm part of National Speakers Association. They partner with eSpeakers.com. eSpeakers has just gone out and built this custom AI so you can feed it all that stuff, but it wouldn't bring in anything from outside of that viewpoint in there. Well, that was really expensive for them to build. And I can't just go get that off the shelf or something. But, you know, they built something like that to be able to do this with. And it's like, well, I've tried doing it myself with some of my content just built on top of, you know, ChatGPT. And sure enough, I'll ask it questions because I'm a servant leadership guy. And the questions, answers I get back do not align with how I would approach business.
Right. Yeah. So we actually, and this is just within the last, late last week, I'm in the process of partnering with a company to create that'll just be my stuff. And they're in a beta testing phase of this thing, and it's still going to be relatively expensive, but I think much less expensive than some of the other options I've seen, but it'll just be mine because I had the same thing. And, you know, I had someone else do it for me, and they said, I think I have something simple like, give me, I don't know, 10. The top 10 cash flow tips from Mr. Biz. Mm-hmm. And the tips, there were like maybe six of them that were like almost verbatim, like from me, right? And then there were two that were like, it's kind of a variation. And there were two that were like, where the hell did that come from? I don't think I've ever said that publicly. I've never written that. I've never said, you know, Even though they even tried to specify, but like you said, they're, you know, ChatGPT is trying to pull from everywhere to give the best answer, right?
Right.
But trying to get that into one spot is pretty difficult, I think.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with experimenting on things. I mean, there's, you know, in the finance world, like there's a place coming from marketing my side where like the dirty secret for all these marketing tools that everybody buys, whether you're at small businesses or big public companies, is that between 50 and 60% of MarTech, marketing technology that's bought, usually software as a service, is not actually used. And so, and it doesn't matter whether I said whether it's a small business or big business. Well, I would love to have something that's not just showing me pulling in, here's the reoccurring subscriptions monthly or annually, but doing that with user data from my customer. I never want to snoop on my employees. I don't know. That's not how you hold people accountable, but something that could just merge this together and say, here's the things we're paying for that people aren't using. Do you need to start using them? Do we need to change processes to have time? Can we save $6,000 a month by cutting these out? Like that would be a wonderful use for AI that there's nothing that does that together, but it could easily go in without being intrusive and give some of that feedback. That's ways that you can experiment with things today. But most people are just looking at, we have to go hardcore, or on the other side, they're scared and they're not touching it at all.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to your point earlier, I think that's a huge mistake. I mean, I've been telling people again for the last year plus, like you either get on the AI bandwagon or you're getting run over by the train because the train's coming through. Like it's already starting to chug. And a year from now, or fill in the blank, however long from now, not very long, depending on the type of business you have, you're going to get run over by that train. And then you're going to try to grab onto the freaking caboose and you'll be, you know, flailing off the back end of this dang thing, trying to figure things out on the fly. And meanwhile, several of your competitors are driving the friggin' train and you're way behind, you know?
Yeah, it takes experimenting. I think especially for anybody in a leadership position, whether you're a small business or a mid-sized business, like I'm starting to experiment with AI and Google Sheets. And so like just today, like I have a plugin that brings some stuff in, a custom tool that was built, and I can theoretically ask it anything based on the data that's in there. And I've had it for about 4 months now and I hadn't started using it. And so finally I just decided I need to keep it open on the screen with a little post-it note to remind me to use it. And anytime I'm going to go and do something, ask it a question and try it with the AI within there. So with that, I'm not like, I haven't written a formula that otherwise I would have hand coded in a month at this point.
Yeah. Good stuff. We got to hit a break here, guys. Talking with Kurt Euler this week. We're going to come back and find out more tips on how to scale your business.
How would you like to have direct access to Mr. Biz to help you run your business more profitably and more efficiently? At MrBizSolutions.com, you get live access to not only Mr. Biz, but also several of his hand-picked and trusted business experts, each with 20-plus years of experience to help you optimally manage and grow your business. That's just the start of where Mr. Biz Solutions begins. Learn more at MrBizSolutions.com.
That's MrBizSolutions.com.
Attention, Mr. Biz Nation. We have an exclusive offer just for you. Get lifetime access to scarcity countdown timers and logic links for only $69. Yes, you heard it right. Only $69. These tools will add urgency to your email campaigns and website pages, helping you increase conversions, sales, and capture more leads. Don't miss this incredible opportunity. Visit GetPulseTools.com now and take your business to new heights.
Check out all three of Mr. Biz's best-selling books at MrBizBooks.com. Now, once again, here's Mr. Biz.
All right, welcome back to the show. Again, talking with Mr. Kurt Euler this week. KurtEuler.com. You can follow him on LinkedIn, on X, on Instagram, and he also has a YouTube channel. Go to check those out. And again, we'll put those in the show notes as well. All right, Kurt. So I want to talk about, more specifically, about scaling. And I'm thinking, you know, a business that's doing, you know, let's say between 2 and 20 million a year. I think that's kind of the sweet spot generally of the people who watch and listen to the show that are business owners or entrepreneurs. You know, what are some of those things that they should really be looking at, especially now? We talked a lot about AI last segment, but what are some of those things they should be looking at now to really have some explosive growth in 2024?
Yeah, great question. There's probably five things. I can just kind of gloss through them and we can talk about them. The first is kind of what would break if you actually had like a 10x increase in throughput? If sales came through, if I actually gave your team 10x the number of leads you normally get on a monthly business. And it's a wonderful thought exercise to do that in every part of the department, like literally down to accounting and payroll, because that's how you start to uncover where there's friction, where you actually should go through and solve a lot of those things today, because you don't realize that they're actually holding it back. The next thing would be, who's making decisions on your team and coaching them? A lot of times that sweet spot you mentioned, 2 to 20 million, you have a really strong CEO, maybe executive team. But and they've been making a lot of decisions, even if they don't realize it. Well, there's all these decisions that take place in the team, like 99% of the decisions that take place that impact customers, they don't actually make. And if they're not keenly aware that they should be pushing decisions down, other people are hiding those decisions. So they can't actually weigh in wisely. With that, I always think there's this big thing that's like, everybody needs to know you're wrong about at least three things in your business today that you think you're right about. I mean, we've all been that place where something happens and you go back and now you go reanalyze the data. And it's not just hindsight. You realize you should have known 6 months or 24 months ago that that big decision of a $7 million investment was wrong. And so when you start opening yourself and your team up to, we might be wrong about something that feels right today, the world starts to change about that then. But no matter how many times you tell your teams that, they won't believe you that you actually want them to come in word and say, hey, Ken, I might be wrong about this, unless you start coming out on a almost weekly basis and you tell them things that you were wrong about, because they're going to see it in your actions to believe your words from number three. And the fifth thing, and we can talk about any and all these, is at that 2 to 20 million standpoint, you have to be building a business so that you can act as a mad scientist for the majority of your time. Processes, systems in place, so you have a factory manager that's running the line, the mass production line, to allow you to go out and mad scientist some other crazy shit so that once you figure it out, you can hand it back to them. So that's kind of the combination of the five big things. We can dive in on any and all of those if you want.
Well, all of them are great, but you know, even just starting with the first one, I love that, because I think a lot of people don't think that way. And I always joke, Kurt, that I think strategic to a fault. And what I mean by that is I'm always thinking out 3, 5, 8, 10 years, right? But I do it to a fault, because while I'm thinking about that, I trip over the curb that's right freaking in front of me, right? And I meant that, right? But I think it's important, and I've had this happen with clients where they'll hire a hotshot marketing person that all of a sudden they do blow up, right? And all of a sudden their leads go from whatever, 50 a week, 10 a day, to 500 a week, right? They go 10X on it, and they're like, okay, time out, stop the marketing. I'm like, no.
Right.
This is why we need to figure this out way back, right? So when we have this explosive growth, we are prepared for it, and we've got the systems in place that like, okay, when we get to this level, we're going to hire someone, right? And we're going to start looking for someone. because it's going to take us 60 days to hire them. It's going to take us 30 days to get them up to speed. So that's 90. That's a 90-day process for that person. We're looking, starting to hire to getting them to be productive. It's 90 days out. And, you know, thinking about that way, I think a lot of people don't think about it that way. And then they do start to blow up and they got to hit the brakes.
Right.
And then they figure shit out and then they get, then it's, oh, now, how do we get this train rolling again? You know?
Yeah. And they have to be thinking 10X or 50X type of, or to your example, like 100X type of example for things, because it's easy to kind of say, I don't need to think about a bottleneck, or it's just, I need to hire one more salesperson or two more salespeople. But if things were to 10X or 50X, you might then over the next 6 to 12 months have to hire 12. And so if you're used to only hiring one or two with that ramp that you mentioned, well, it's easy to go, well, we could just grunt it out and handle that. That's very different than thinking, what if I had to hire a dozen people? Okay, well, if I have to hire a dozen, then I'm not just hiring the best man or woman that walks in the door. I'm having to hire some average people. Well, maybe my sales process isn't set up in a way to support the average person. Because if you want to scale, you can't always have a 0.1% salesperson calling right. people. And so, no, what would the bell curve salesperson perform at? Well, that's part of figuring out. That's not a 60-day lead time.
Well, and the other thing I like about that too, Kurt, is, and it goes back to what you had mentioned when you first mentioned that tip, is you need to figure out the bottlenecks now, because the other bottleneck I'm thinking about, not only what you mentioned about the salesperson, you can't just be hiring the top 1% people or 0.1% people, is I'm thinking about your hiring process. Right. So if I said that to a business owner and they go, there's no way I can find 12 people in the next, you know, 8 months. Okay, well, then you need to fix your damn process, your hiring process. How do we expedite the process? Where the hell are you finding people? Are you interviewing 10 and hiring one? Right. Okay, well, to your point, maybe you need to, you know, change your standards a little bit, and now you're hiring 2 out of 10. And by the way, it shouldn't be 2 out of 10 either, because you're hiring a bunch of crap people. So how do we fix the process so you're not getting, and have to talk to 10 people to hire 2, right? That's another way to compress that time schedule of getting people in the door, because that's, again, like you said, a big bottleneck. And, you know, it goes in the whole downstream impact of that. Like, oh, well, I'm bringing in 2 people and I, you know, only one of them's going to last because one of them's going to suck. And, you know, okay, well, again, why is that?
And are you having to go out and recruit people, or is your team, like for me, part of that, like looking at leadership in like the second one about who's making decisions and coaching them on a daily basis, so they'll make better decisions next week. So you have to make less decisions in the future. Well, when you treat people that way, well, guess what? They like working there much more, which, secret for everyone, FTC just said, or FCC just said, no more non-competes. So
right.
you have to be in a state that didn't abide by them. It didn't matter. That doesn't change. For most states, it's a big change. So not only do you want to treat people well and support them, but because you don't want them to churn out, but that's how you hire a bunch of people. If the companies I've worked at, when we get that leadership environment going and we say we need to hire 12 people, we actually get a sigh of relief very often, because people have been going, I have friends that I want to bring here, but we didn't have a role for them.
Yeah, I think, again, I just absolutely love that. I know we're stuck on the one tip. I mean, there are great tips, but I think that is so critically important, because that absolutely stalls everything out. Like I mentioned that example I gave, you get someone in like yourself and all of a sudden you start blowing up the leads, and then you got to hit pause.
Right.
And then again, sometimes I think it's difficult. Maybe the market's changed. Maybe you had to pause for 60 or 90 days to catch up on hiring and get people up to speed. And then things have changed in the marketplace, or the economy has gotten worse. The economy has gotten better. Who knows, right? And so how do you restart the engine? And sometimes it's not as simple as it was the first time you threw the logs on a fire and it started to burn like an inferno. You put the same logs on 90 days later and those logs are not, they're wet. They're not, you know, they're smoking. They're not firing away like they were before. So I think it's critically important to get that right up front, even before you start getting into that, or maybe in concert with it, yeah. But you really have to make sure you have that nailed down.
And nobody wants to take the time. And too often, I think business owners, they use bad self-language. They say, when they talk about, hey, I need to slow down to think through these things, they think I have to stop working on the business to pause and do that. No, that's working on your business. That's stuff that you have to do, and you should be doing it at least twice a year. Maybe not 4 times a year, but at least twice a year, pause down and look through to every department, what are your potential bottlenecks?
Yeah, I love it. Again, Mr. Kurt Euler, KurtEuler.com, LinkedIn, X, Instagram, YouTube. Kurt, thanks so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. Awesome information.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Have a fantastic rest of your week. And don't forget, as always, cash flow is king.
To become part of Mr. Biz Nation, follow him on all social media platforms or never miss a show by going to MrBizRadio.com. If you prefer free video content, visit the Mr. Biz YouTube channel or check out his streaming channel, which is available on 100-plus streaming platforms at MrBizNetwork.com.